This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Deanna Kovar, president of the Agriculture and Turf Division of John Deere. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. American sugar production supports over 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with John Deere's Deanna Kovar next. American sugar beet and sugarcane farmers help keep grocery store shelves stocked with sugar, an American-made, all-natural ingredient. American sugar production supports more than 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. For nearly 200 years, John Deere has provided tools and technology to help farmers be more profitable and productive. Deanna Kovar, president of the Agriculture and Turf Division for John Deere, says technology is playing an even greater role in helping farmers achieve their sustainability and productivity goals. But the mission of the company hasn't changed.
At John Deere, our first goal is to help make farmers more profitable, more productive, and to do their work in a more sustainable way. And we believe our opportunity is to bring innovation to them to do that. And 189-year-old company now, it's been part of us. It's a core value of ours for all of those 189 years. So,
how do you interpret the directions that you're going with the technological advances that are today and the intricate needs that producers have? How do you come together to look for solutions?
Yeah, well, it starts with us understanding the farmer. And 5 years ago, we reorganized our entire company. There isn't a vice president of tractors. There are vice presidents of production systems. So we have gotten really close to our customers to understand the economics and the agronomics on the farms and understand the jobs that they do and think about what are the challenges that they have and how can we bring equipment and technology solutions to bear to help them with those challenges. And it's all about lowering input costs and increasing yield and improving their quality of life as we do it.
Some people see farmers even today as the American Gothic, Ma and Pa standing in front of the stable, and that's as far from the truth of commercial agriculture as it could be.
That is 100% true. Farmers are some of the most technologically advanced people that I know. And, you know, for 7 years now, we've gone to the Consumer Electronics Show, the CES show in Las Vegas. It's the largest tech show in the world. And we always bring farmers with us because a lot of time there is some skepticism from the technology community that agriculture is not tech forward. And so we, of course, show our amazing technologies and talk about how we make them and how they help the farmer. But it's always best to hear it from a farmer. And when you see those tech-focused folks walk away from talking to a farmer and realize just how advanced agriculture is, it's always enlightening. And, you know, the other part is we have to help people understand that farmers didn't just start adopting technology yesterday, right? We've been on a journey for almost 30 years relative to yield documentation and yield data and AutoTrack and all these technologies that have just continued to build upon one on the other to get us to this point today. And it's an evolution. And every farm out there can adopt another technology, but they've been doing it. So they're used to it and they understand it. And, you know, if we can convince them that the value's there, it's great to see them adopt these technologies.
There was a day that the consumer in the United States, after World War II, they just wanted abundant food and affordable food. We've progressed to the point today that consumers want food produced the way they want it produced in the fashion that they see. They're concerned about sustainability. They're concerned about the environment. Are your customers concerned about sustainability and concerned about the environment?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when you think about a farmer, that what they have to give and lend, what they have to hand down to the next generation is their land. And so for them, it's critically important that they make sure they nurture that land and keep it fertile for generations to come. And so sustainability is as important for them as anyone because it's their livelihood.
What are the things that you keep in mind to make it affordable for them to embrace
them. Well, I think there's really two important things that we're doing to make sure every farm can adopt these technologies. The first is we're putting them on as retrofit kits, right? If you think about a display, a receiver, a modem, you know, those are the core of our precision ag technologies. And you can put that set of tools on literally any machine. You can put it on a 30-year-old tractor, and you can auto-track. You can put it on a red tractor or combine, and you can auto-track. So you can get into this technology on any machine because we've made it retrofittable. The majority of the See & Spray machines that are out in the wild today, a high majority, are retrofit kits. So it was on a sprayer that the farmer already owned, all the way back to a 2018 sprayer. So 8 years of sprayers that are capable of being retrofitted with these technologies. So that allows us to not have to buy a new piece of equipment to get access to these technologies.
And that's tough because you'd like to be able to sell new equipment, but is that also not a symptom or a reflection of the challenging times that producers have seen over the past 4 years?
Yeah, I believe, so number one, our goal is to get producers profitable and productive, and however they get that, is that the new machine with the new technology or updating their existing machinery, that's success to us. So we don't look at one more than the other and say one's better than the other. For us, it's both important, because our goal is to get these technologies that help save inputs and grow yield on as many acres as possible. That's what we care about. And so, you know, the retrofit is part of it, but also part of it is us lowering the upfront cost of technologies. You know, you can get into See & Spray today for a low upfront cost and pair the savings you get year in and year out with a license fee. And that allows a whole lot more farmers to be able to afford it in year one and be able to get paid for the value of it over time.
You have the ability with See & Spray not to determine a green plant versus brown dirt, but exactly what kind of plant. Give us just a glimpse, if you can, for the consumer, for the folks that are listening, to understand what this technology is bringing to farmers today in the goal of sustainability, in the goal of productivity.
Yeah, you know, I think what's beautiful about agriculture is sustainability means sustainability for the earth and for the environment, mm-hmm. but it also is profitability sustainability and helping farmers grow more with less, right, as we think about inputs and yield. And See & Spray does just that. Over 5 million acres last year, we saved 50% of post-non-residual herbicide because farmers used See & Spray.
The machine through the field, 15 miles an hour.
Or 16, okay.
16 miles an hour, and it's identifying a weed, and it's only spraying the weed.
And here's the crazy thing. We're doing it in standing wheat now, too. So we've added, with See & Spray 2.0, we've added small grains to the repertoire. So when we first launched See & Spray 4 years ago, it was cotton, corn, and soy. And now our amazing engineers have figured out how to identify a broadleaf weed in a standing small grain crop. And so we're going beyond just the first three crops, and we're adding more and more potential for See & Spray. And then when you get into small grains, it's not just weeds. We can also use the same system to variable rate fungicides or variable rate desiccants based on the biomass that's out there. So we can help them save not just herbicides, but on other spray passes that they're making as well.
So this machine thinks as it moves through the field. It makes decisions for you.
It is superhuman. Yep, it is making those decisions on the go and saving chemical. And the thing we've proven as well is it's also increasing yields. So when I don't spray parts of my field because there aren't weeds there, I'm seeing a yield bump.
Explain the concept of allowing the producer to manage at greater levels than he's ever done before.
And that's what these technologies do. If you think about the X9 combine sitting behind you and the automation that combine has in it, it's got harvest settings automation, targetless. So you pull in the field, it's looking at all of the other farmers who are farming the crop you're farming in about a 50-mile radius and trying to figure out what's the best starting point for settings for you. So we're using that huge data set that farmers have entrusted with us to provide value right back to the farmer. So they pull into the field, and the combine knows what the setting should be. And then as it goes through the field, it's adjusting itself based on what it's seeing in that field and with that combine. But on top of that, we have literally become predictive. Not proactive, predictive, because we've put cameras on the front of that combine called predictive ground speed automation. We're ingesting satellite imagery as well so that we can understand the biomass of the field and change the speed and other settings at which we're harvesting. And we're adding 20% productivity to the farmer in how many acres an hour they're able to combine, because the combine can see and ingest and decide a whole lot faster than the farmer can.
Are we at the beginning of artificial intelligence in agriculture, or do you think we're already at the end?
No. We started a part of our company called Precision Farming in 1998, and I would tell you, from an automation and precision in agriculture, we're still just getting started.
There's a chorus of agriculture groups calling for a new farm bill. In Farm Bill 2.0, there are updated credit elements. There's policy statements that would help adopt precision agriculture. There's a lot of things there. Does John Deere have an interest in seeing policy that helps to advance the industry?
Yeah, we're only successful at John Deere when farmers are successful. It's an easy equation. And we believe that farmers need certainty. And a lot of things that are in the current farm bill are dated. They're not up to speed. I mean, a lot has changed since 2014, and we need to bring the farm bill along to make sure it's current and it reacts to the things that farmers need today.
So if farmers are able to advance technology, they're able to advance their sustainability practices and their productivity. Do you think it would be important from a John Deere aspect that farmers are able to afford this technology and encouraged to move in that direction?
100%, 100%. That's why we're big proponents of the Precise Act as a part of the farm bill, but also why we've chosen to lower the upfront cost of this technology and allow farmers to pay for it as they go and pay for it as they get the value of it. So that affordability piece is a big part of why we've chosen to take the business model choice we have.
So on the show floor at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, there was a John Deere tractor that ran on a high blend rate of ethanol that has the signature of the Secretary of Agriculture
Yes.
on it. Can you tell me about this special John Deere engine?
Yep. So we at Commodity Classic showed an E98 engine and an E98 run 8R tractor. And it's one of a few that we have out there. It's a prototype at this point, but we believe it's a huge opportunity. We 100% are focused on supporting renewable fuels and how agriculture can not only feed and clothe, but also fuel the world. And so we're using our voice to try to make sure that people understand how important that is to agriculture. And as we were doing that, we were thinking, well, what can we do to really prove that biofuels are the answer? And we looked to our own equipment and said, why not? Let's see what we can do. And I think we're excited about the opportunity. We ran it last fall with several customers in Iowa, and this year we'll run it for planting in Iowa and Illinois, several machines, and really try to get feedback from farmers. There are a lot of technical things for us to figure out yet, and there's also ecosystem and industry things to make sure we can get E98 delivered to the farm to figure out. But it's really important for us. And one of the other benefits of this E98 tractor is E98 burns so clean, you don't need a diesel exhaust fluid as a part of it.
So if you have a tractor that will run on 98% blended ethanol, is it safe to say John Deere has a position on E15 legislation proposed in Washington?
There's no doubt we have a position on E15, and you know, we support year-round E15. It only makes sense. There's no reason not to have it. And, you know, it's good for agriculture. I'm going to go back to part of the sustainability in agriculture is not only the environmental sustainability, but we all need farmers to be successful because of the food they create and all they do for rural economies. So it's critically important that we find the demand opportunities, and E15 is one of those that's right in front of us.
We're in front of the Environmental Protection Agency, the Trump administration announcing RVOs. So not only E15 from Congress, but also an advantage for renewable diesel, which, again, runs in your machines, but it also runs in engines across the country.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And finding ways not only for on-road, off-road, but also airplanes and ships is something that we need to continue to focus on and to work on. And I think the key is we need both renewable diesels and ethanols to continue to expand in their usage in this country and around the world. And it can't be one or the other. It has to be both of them driving forward for all farmers.
No secret that agriculture is a cyclical business. And I recall being at farm shows and inside implement dealerships when times were good. And you had to wait. If you wanted a new machine, you had to wait for manufacturing. We're in that other side of the cyclical pendulum now. You had to make some tough decisions with regard to your employees. So where are you now?
We have said that we think 2026 in North America is going to be down 15 to 20% from an equipment standpoint. This is now the third year in a row of double-digit reductions in equipment demand. You know, at Deere, we're very focused on making sure we understand where the market is and being prepared for that. So we definitely have had to, unfortunately, have some layoffs over the last 24 months. But I'm excited to tell you that just 2 weeks ago, we announced 140 employees coming back to our Waterloo operations. And Waterloo, Iowa is where we literally pour all the castings in our foundry. It's where we build the drivetrains. It's where we build the engines. And it's where we put those beautiful tractors all together in one town in four different facilities. And because we're starting to see maybe clear indications of the bottom and some order activity for that factory that says we need to start ramping up a little bit, we brought 140 of those employees back. And that's exactly what we want to do. And we know it's going to take the farm economy to get better to do it. So that's why we're so focused on how can we help American agriculture.
I don't know if it's economic development, but it tells the story of the success of agriculture and the ag industry ripples through rural economies.
100%. If you think about, you know, we have 30,000 employees at John Deere that sit here in the U.S. Our dealers have two times that in rural America. And then you think about all the suppliers that we have as well. I mean, at John Deere, 80% of what we sell in the U.S., we build in the U.S., and 75% of the parts that go into those machines come from the U.S. So that's not just the employees we have, that's not just the employees at our dealer, but that's the entire supply chain that agriculture is supporting when things are going well. And even today, we're supporting lots of jobs in rural America.
One of the headlines over the past several months has been right to repair. Is there a difference between right to repair and right to modify? And where is this discussion now with John Deere?
Yeah, there is a huge chasm between right to repair and right to modify. John Deere wholeheartedly believes that farmers should have the choice to decide how their equipment gets repaired. Should it get repaired at the John Deere dealer, in their own shops by them, or in other alternative repair surface solutions that are out there? And so we've been very focused on making sure farmers understand they have choice and providing them the tools that they need in order to repair their own equipment. And that's John Deere Operations Center Pro Service. So a year ago, we launched this tool. It's an online tool that any farmer, any independent repair service area can purchase and use. And they get all of the tools to diagnose their equipment, to do software updates on their equipment, and to order parts for their equipment. And so they have basically the same set of tools that a dealer has at their disposal to diagnose and repair equipment, including doing authorized software updates. And that's the difference between right to repair and right to modify, is we're constantly updating our software to make sure these machines are running in tip-top shape. We want the farmer to be able to do those updates on their own. What we can't have is modifications to the software, because there's a lot of safety built into our equipment. There's a lot of air quality regulations built into our equipment that we are on the hook for to make sure are right. And so it's important that they have all the tools at their disposal to make sure when they need their equipment to run, they can. But we also have to be careful about what we're doing to modify equipment.
So let's drift into regulation for a moment. From the Environmental Protection Agency, have there been some announcements recently that are a plus for John Deere?
100%. There have been two announcements over the last 12 months that are really important. One is the one from last summer that allows equipment manufacturers like Deere to extend the time from when a customer has an issue with their diesel exhaust fluid system on their equipment to the time that the equipment starts to derate or not be as productive as they would like. And historically, that was a two-hour limit. The EPA has allowed us to extend that. So that's a huge opportunity for us. We are in the process of updating all of the software of the machines that are in production now, and we will go all the way to get to every machine that's ever been sold in the U.S. with DEF on it, that we can extend that from 2 hours beyond that, to let the farmer know that they can finish the day, they can finish the job, they can finish the field they're in before they've got to do something to fix that issue. So that 100%, we're supportive of what the EPA did, and we're on it to start shipping out software. We already have some of our products that have new software available to extend that from 2 hours to 20 hours. And then just in the last couple of weeks, at our request, the EPA has also said that farmers can now fix their tractors when they do have a DEF issue. So if you have a diesel exhaust fluid issue, at some point your machine could get derated. So it means that it can't do the job any longer. The engine power isn't there for it. And you used to, based on the guidance that we had from the EPA, you used to have to get your John Deere dealer to come out and unlock it. And now the EPA has said that we can use tools like Operation Center Pro Service to allow the customer to unlock that themselves so they can fix it themselves. And so that announcement came a couple weeks ago, and by mid-March, John Deere Operation Center Pro Service will have the ability to unbrick a machine if it falls into this derate situation.
Do you think that we will see an electric John Deere tractor, and how rapidly is autonomy growing in this business?
Yeah, so we've already showed an electric John Deere tractor. It's a 100 horsepower or so tractor that we've shown, and we've got out operating in orchards and vineyards and on dairies, where they, you know, use the tractor for a few hours and to feed animals, and then can plug it in and go back at it later in the day. So we have active development of electric tractor. There's a limit to how far you can go on an electric tractor. And on the autonomy side, you know, we are early in autonomy. Just like other technologies, we're literally just getting started. You know, our focus has been on making sure it's the safest system, but also that it's as productive as a manned tractor. So we have launched officially the ability for a farmer to buy a retrofit kit. It too is retrofittable back to model year 21 tractors, 8Rs and 9Rs, and a farmer can go out and buy it today. There's a lot to learn when you change a system like farming, and when you go from a person in the cab to not a person in the cab. And so the farmers that are using it are finding the benefits and trying to figure out how to fit it into their operation. And it's not just drop the tractor off, but also figuring out how they move it, how they fuel it, and how they make sure it's doing a great job.
One of the headlines that is big is tariffs. How has the tariff environment impacted your company?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, when we think about tariffs, we think about the farmer. We think about, you know, making sure that they have access to markets for the crops that they grow. And so when we talk to U.S. administration officials, we start there. We start with how can John Deere help the administration help the farmer by driving more trade deals. And we've seen a number of trade deals come through, and I think we're starting to see some of that demand show up. So I think that is number one. The most important impact for us is that there was a little bit of time with a lot of uncertainty, and now as we have more and more trade deals, I think the American farmer will benefit over time. It just takes us a little time to see it. And certainly, you know, we're navigating the tariff environment. We've been very clear it's about a $1.2 billion cost to us as a company this year, and we know that we can't pass on that to the farmer in the environment that we're in. And so we're working very diligently to make sure we're using all of the tools at our disposal to make that expense as small as possible. Ag use exemptions, USMCA, and all these other tools that we have to try to make sure we limit the impact it has on us.
Well, Deanna Kovar, we want to congratulate you on a rich history at John Deere, and now being the president of Ag and Turf for John Deere. Thanks for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and every time you're here, you'll have the last word.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, and thanks for what you do, helping the world understand what's going on in American agriculture as well. You know, at Deere, we're 100% focused on making sure farmers are profitable and productive, and we'll do that through bringing them amazing equipment, technologies, and other tools that can help them choose John Deere. Help them choose John Deere when they buy a piece of equipment. Help them choose John Deere when it's time to repair a piece of equipment. Help them choose John Deere when they're looking for that next technology that can help them lower their costs or increase their yields. And it's important for us that American agriculture is successful, and that's what we get up every day thinking about. So thanks a lot for this opportunity.
AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. American sugar production supports over 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.